Welcome to After Dark with Rob and Andrew on America Out Loud, available on iHeartRadio, Spotify, Stitcher, Pandora, or Apple Podcast, or head on over to the website AmericaOutLoud.com and check out the articles and podcasts. And we ask you to please share those on social media. That helps a great deal. Any independent media that you can share, please do. It helps out so much. We're once again excited to be joined by retired Philadelphia police officer and journalist Michael Tremogli tonight. We're going to go into detail on CRT, or critical race theory. Michael has just finished a four-part column, and we will pick his brain and get all of that information. For years, we've seen the leftist indoctrination get worse and worse into our school system, and we saw that all manifest last year with these Black Lives Matter riots. The fact is, we need to teach history in the schools, and critical race theory is not history. Would you agree, Rob?
I agree with you completely. First of all, like you said, I want to thank everyone for joining us tonight, After Dark with Rob and Andrew. And I think that tonight's topic is so timely. And I've read Michael's four-part series, two pieces of it, rather. And he's right on point with what he's talking about. And one of the things that I noticed that I think a lot of people fail to realize is that this theory isn't new. It's been around for quite some time. It's just been undercover, so to speak. But now, with the progressives in power and controlling a lot of what Joe Biden is thinking and doing and saying, they see an opportunity to push this agenda through, and push they are doing. Critical race theory has its root in Marxism, and this whole thing with Black Lives Matter, all these different fractions, Antifa, they're all part of this crazy world that is trying to take shape. And if you look back a decade ago, it was around then. And many of the teachers that are teaching our schools or teaching at our schools, they were students at the time being taught little drips and drabs of this. They go off to college, and then it's manifested. They graduate, and it takes full throttle. They're now at the helm of the educational process, and they're giving this to our kids. And it's just that a theory, but for some reason, people are trying to hold it up as being the gospel. Why would you want to create a new form of segregation and racism? Because that's what you're doing. And I don't care how many times people try and say, no, we're not. They need to know about our history. That's not knowing about our history. You are trying to create little activists. You are putting in these kids' head trash. You are allowing them or giving them the green light to discriminate, to talk about another group of people. And of all people, Black people should get this and should turn their back on it. But unfortunately, you have a lot of race baiters as seeing this as an opportunity. This is our opportunity to get back. This is our payback. So we're going to start with the kids being young, and we're going to teach them all this stuff. And for those white parents, those white liberals that are out there that think that they're woke and they're hip and they're so informed, and you're allowing your kids to be subjected to this, shame on you. Your children should be removed from your household, because what you're doing is you're damaging them. 5 years from now, these same kids, if they're fully indoctrinated, will be suffering from psychological issues, won't be able to perform. And then you will have the liberal psychologist who will go in, do an assessment, and start writing theses on this. This is dangerous, my friends. This is extremely dangerous. Do not think that it isn't. It is dangerous. And it's time that we stand up and be counted. It is time that we join parents-teacher conferences, PTAs, school boards, city councils, and push back. Because the people that are allowing this to come in are people like Randy Weingarten. I don't know why she's at the top. There should be someone out there to challenge her, to kick her out. Because this thing, it just, you look at it and you think, well, it's so ancillary. It's just this little one thing. No, it has a bigger and a broader context. If they're able to push this through, they will push through everything else. Men could have babies. There are no genders. There are no pronouns. Kids can barely speak English, and now we want to get rid of the pronouns. I mean, it's all tied up in this one basket of confusion. And it's time we start speaking out, pushing back. As one of our guests said, get comfortable with being uncomfortable. Start raising your hands up, because if you don't, we will be consumed in a bunch of craziness. Meanwhile, the schools that are talking about STEM, they can't get through the first lesson because we're busy trying to teach all of our kids about critical race theory. How can we compete? Wake up, America, wake up. And if you're out there listening, if you have children that are in schools, look and see what they're being taught. Push back, push back. Michael, how are you?
Okay, Rob, I'm doing quite well. And I'm listening very intently to what you're saying. And I really think that you should take your message on the road. I know you're doing it through this, but I really would like you to get in front of some audiences. And I'd really like you to invite you to come down to my neck of the woods and speak to some people, because I like the way you phrase it and the way you express it. And I think it would resonate with a lot of people. Recently, a woman who I've come to know quite well over the past few months and I've come to admire, read these articles that I wrote. And one of the criticisms she had, and I wouldn't quite say it was a criticism, but she said that it would be difficult to translate this to the average person because it was written more academically. And she has a point. It's difficult not to write this academically because I'm trying to come from it. I'm coming to it from an academic, path. And it was difficult for me to write in such a way that and still include everything I wanted to include, because my purpose in writing the articles that I'm writing is to equip candidates, academicians, school teachers, and just the general, just the public in general, with the knowledge to refute the liberal journalists who, although are not the brightest lights on the porch, are very good at regurgitating left-wing cant. And, you know, albeit without any understanding, they have no idea what they're talking about. They're just repeating and parroting it. So I'd like to try to get people on our side to understand more where this is coming from. And as I wrote in the one article, a lot of people are obsessed about it now, but they don't know very much about it, other than what they hear on talk radio and some other things. But it doesn't deal with the depth of it as you're starting to go into here. And it's, as you said, it's been around for quite a while, and it's at least the 1970s, but the roots of it go back before then. And there are two very important origins of this, points of origin for this. One has to do with the Frankfurt School, which very few people have heard of. People like to run around talking about Alinsky's Rules for Radicals, blah, 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 because, I don't know, some talk show host, either Rush Limbaugh or Sean Hannity or somebody said that a couple of years ago, and, you know, everybody repeats it. Now, again, I guarantee most of the people who are repeating that have never read it. But where that also comes from, where that originates from, is something called the, it was an Institute for Social Research in Frankfurt, Germany, just known as the Frankfurt School. So this thesis of critical race theory originated there in 1937, or it was kind of refined there. But it took principles that were proffered much earlier by a guy named Antonio Gramsci. And Antonio Gramsci was an Italian communist who was imprisoned by Mussolini back in the late 20s, early 30s. And he wrote, while his stay in prison, he wrote a series of books and articles and letters, treaties that basically dealt with why Marxism did not take hold as easily in Western Europe and in the Americas as it did in Eastern Europe. And one of the things that he came up with was that the culture in Western Europe and in the Americas was much different than Eastern Europe. And then in order for Marxism to have an effect and be accepted by people in the West, the culture would need to be changed. So he set out a way to do this. And basically you have to control the opinion forming institutions, such as the media, academia, the arts, all those things that communicate ideas to people and affect the way they think and how they think and why they think about certain things. And if he felt that if you did that and you convinced and you discredited the existing culture and the existing history, the existing way of doing things, the existing legal systems, you eventually would, and by discrediting that, people would be upset. They would be disenchanted. They would be disillusioned with the way society, their current society was established and how it operated, and they would revolt and they would be more accepting of Marxism. And that was his theory. And we've seen that. Now, again, that's about 100 years ago. And what we're seeing then is this was refined about 5 to 10 years later in this Institute of Social Research by people like Max Horkheimer, Herbert Marcuse, Theodore Adorno, and Eric Fromm, who's a fairly famous college professor now. And they took that, and I think it was Horkheimer that developed the traditional critical theory. And what he felt was important was to take an issue like race and make it so that the current Western society was defined by racism and slavery. And by doing so, you again discredit the legal system, because everything then is going to be based on race. Okay. The entire legal system the entire criminal justice system was all a function of racism, and that crimes were just nothing more than a way to control people, and either control them because they were poor or control them because they were minorities, anything except the fact that they were criminals. And it was kind of a play on the theme of criminals being victims of society rather than being victims of their own choices, rather than being committing crimes through their own choices and making bad choices in life, or just preying on other people. So they made them more sympathetic, and they made minorities more sympathetic, because minorities, after all, were never responsible for what they did because they were just victims of this oppressive system. And so when now you have a system that is being portrayed as being nothing but oppressive and ruthless and genocidal, white Europeans came and they murdered and slaughtered Native Americans without thinking, and they enslaved Africans and they brought them over here and they treated them cruelly, and name a minority, and a racial minority, and that's what you have. So the idea being that you're going to generate hatred of the existing structure, the existing social structure. You're going to generate guilt by people who are in the existing social, so who control the existing social structure. And eventually these people who are now out of power will come to power. And everybody thinks, well, okay, this is just, and this is maybe something that should be, is due, because after all, these people were excluded for so long. Well, yes and no. Obviously, African Americans in America have been treated differently, and same thing with Native Americans. But it's not entirely, not to the extent that these critical theorists try to portray. So, for example, if you want to teach about slavery, fine, I have no problem. Teach about slavery, but teach all about slavery. You know, don't teach that the white Europeans went into the interior of the African continent and kidnapped blacks and then took them, you know, took them to the United States, and or took them to the Western Hemisphere and made slaves out of them. That's not the way it happened. Perfect example of that is back in 1994, I believe it was, or 95, President Clinton was touring Africa, and he was in Uganda, and the country of Uganda, which is in Central Africa, and he issued an apology for slavery. And the president of Uganda said, and I'm going to paraphrase now, he said something along the lines of, you don't have to apologize, we did it to ourselves. Meaning that African tribes warred on one another, captives were taken as slaves, or criminals were made slaves, and they were sold to white European traders who met them on the coast. They didn't come into the interior of Africa to capture slaves, they met them on the coast. You want to talk about genocide among Native Americans? Fine, talk about that, and no problem with that. But then also understand that There were the Caribs tribes preyed on the Guanahabe, I think they were called. In fact, they were cannibals, and they chased those people off their island and onto the island of Cuba, and then they started invading Cuba. So these people lived in fear of those, and so they were predatory. It wasn't a monolithic group of people. They warred on one another. They killed one another. They exterminated one another, just like other humans do. These are all parts of, these are all facets of the human condition. And to say that the indigenous peoples or the blacks in Africa were some kind of utopia or lived in were more noble or more moral or more peaceful, or Asians were better, it's just not true. And unfortunately, that's what these critical theorists try to do. And this was, you know, you go back 25 years ago, this was called multiculturalism. That's what the multiculturalists tried to do. Again, everything was to portray white people, white Europeans, white Americans as being responsible for all the evils of the world. And it's just simply not true.
It's not true. What I find interesting, something that you just said, is if you're going to teach about slavery, if you're going to teach about the Europeans coming to America, you need to teach the truth and stop trying to paint this picture that it was the Western white man's fault that the slaves were brought here, as opposed to just saying, you know, the slaves that were here, they were sold to the Europeans by their own people. But we don't want to hear the truth. We want to create, as in critical race theory, this theory that there is an oppressor and the person who's being oppressed is a person of color. He's always oppressed. No matter what the black man does, he is oppressed. He cannot do for himself because he's oppressed. And the white man has to admit it. But at the same time, the oppressor continues to look to the oppressor to uplift him. What kind of sense does that make?
And exactly.
And the perceived oppressor, the white liberal, tries to hide everything that he's done by giving in to the oppressed. And I scratch my head and I look at this. I'm like, for the love of God, do you guys actually see what they're telling you? When you look around in society and you look at who controls the entertainment industry, the media, big tech, they're all liberals. They're the ones that control it. They're disseminating the information. They're disseminating the negativity about the oppressed. So it goes back to when you were saying Marxism controls the communication. You basically control everything. Look at what's happening today. Look at how they're able to kick conservative off of all these platforms so that they can control it. So the people that are in control are the actual people that have been oppressing the oppressed, but they want to say, no, it is the conservatives. You guys are oppressing them. But what do they have? They're not in control. At any given point in time, the liberal media could have rewrote the script and create positive images of the perceived oppressed.
Well, it goes back to, you know, I think it was Plato, or at least it's attributed to Plato, who said that you can write the laws if I can write the songs. And the meaning being obviously that if he can affect the culture, law will follow the culture. And that's quite true. You know, culture drives politics. Culture drives legislation. These people that run around and say, well, I'm a fiscal conservative, I'm a social liberal. Well, they're just Democrats that don't want to pay taxes. I consider myself a social conservative. And my feeling is that, and a fiscal liberal, be as generous as you have to be with people that need it. But if you live a socially conservative lifestyle, you won't have that many people. You won't have people using drugs or having, you know, 55,000 kids out of wedlock and needing abortions all the time because they're living a socially conservative lifestyle. During the 1990s, the multiculturalists led an effort to destroy the very foundation of Western civilization in the Western Hemisphere by initiating a vicious campaign against the quincentennial of Columbus discovering America for Europeans. They did everything they could to discourage that commemoration, and it's become even more audacious now, 30 years later. And Gramsci's ideas are seen very easily in that effort. Just as you talk about the idea of white privilege. Well, the idea of privilege isn't new. Again, it's the cultural hegemony that Gramsci talked about. The same concept was used in Red China by Mao Zedong. He used what they called Han privilege, and that the Han people, the predominant ethnic group in China, were privileged because of their, just by their very nature. And he turned against them. So this was, so now you're taking that same concept that Mao used in Red China, and he's, you know, you're taking it now, instead of Han privilege, it's white privilege, same thing. It's again, these ideas are consistent, and people have to know that these things are not legitimate. They are done with a purpose, and the purpose is to make sure that Marxism becomes the dominant culture in America and in the world. Okay, the Marxist way of thinking, and ironically, I mean, the Marxism is, I mean, it's been responsible for more genocide, more misery, more suffering than any other political system ever. And yet you still have these people who are fanatical about it, and they want Marxists to dominate. I don't understand it, but that's the way it is. And I just want people to know that this critical race theory is not something that just came up now. It's part of a plan. It's part of a whole idea, a whole movement, okay? And it goes back at least 100 years. You know, Gramsci, basically, they say he was the bridge between Karl Marx and what you see today. I'll give you another example. Herbert Marcuse, who was part of that Frankfurt School, he came up with this theory that Black people cannot be racist. Now, I'm sure you've heard of that before, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, Black people can't be racist because they don't have power. When I was first told, when somebody said that to me, this goes back to 1990, I think it was, 1989, 90, 91, somewhere around there. A professor confronted me with that. And I said, well, let me ask you something. It was 1998. Just a few weeks earlier, a white guy in Philadelphia was killed by a Black guy because he was a white guy walking through a Black neighborhood. I said, let me ask you something, Professor. That white guy was just as much a victim of racism, okay, because he was killed by a Black guy. And that Black guy had more power than he did because he was holding a gun. So how can you tell me that Blacks can't be racist? A Black guy holding a gun has just as much power as any Ku Klux Klan member holding a rope, okay? And a white guy who was killed because he's walking in a Black neighborhood is just as much a victim of racism as any Black guy who was ever killed by a white mob in the South. And, you know, so these are the types of things that have to, that they go unchallenged in the schools and in the colleges and in the universities and in the drawing rooms and in places like the Upper West Side of Manhattan. And because they're unchallenged, because nobody refutes them, they fester and they grow. And it gets worse and worse and worse. And it filters down to other people.
And Michael, I've got to say, just to add on to what you're saying about that theory that Blacks can't be racist, I remember it so clearly when I was in high school and I was taking psychology. And that was one of the things that my instructor said, that Black people cannot be racist because they don't have any power of anything. They don't control anything. And I was so baffled by that. And I thought, that makes absolutely no sense. So I questioned it. I did my research and I never believed it. Whereas there were other students who heard that, took it, and walked away. So those same students who are now in society and they're probably teachers and they're living by the same thing, that Black people can't be racist, when you see Black people, unfortunately, committing crimes against white people, Black people that are committing crimes against Asians. Now, to be clear, because I know that there are some that are out there that will hear this and will say, well, white people commit crimes also. We get it. I know that. But at this point in time, I am talking about the Black people in my community that are committing crimes against other groups of people. And I don't care who's doing it, it's wrong. But when you have a theory like CRT that's teaching you or saying that, no, they can't do it. They have no power, and that they are the oppressed, and the oppressor is the white man. And just going back to your article, and one of the things that stood out also was the idea of destroying Western civilization, just destroying it, destroying America, burning it down, which is what, as you pointed out in your article, that Jesse Jackson had said in the 90s, we're going to burn down American values. We're going to just burn it down. And do what? What do you do once you burn it down?
Replace it with Marxism.
Right.
And,
unfortunately.
And the thing is that now, you know, as people read this, they'll understand now when they hear that, you know, a black person doesn't have, it can't be racist. They will now realize if they understand that this comes from one social scientist, a Marxist, Herbert Marcuse, who developed that theory back in the 30s or sometimes after, maybe the late 40s. After, I don't know exactly when he came up with that idea, but they need to understand that this is where this comes from. And you can argue against it. You can say, well, wait a minute. Why do you say that, professor? Why, you know, who told you this? And the professor may not even know that this originated with this school. Oh, professor, that just comes, that's just one theory by one man. Okay. And he was wrong. And he's doing it because he was a Marxist. And his rationale was that he hated Western civilization. He's not saying it because it's right. He said it because he hates Western civilization. And he's doing this for political reasons. An ideological read. It has nothing to do with right or wrong. And instead of, so now they have to defend themselves because right now they're being presented as morally superior. They're not. They're not intellectually superior. This was just generated by a bunch of guys who, for the most part, weren't exactly brilliant people. There were a bunch of leftists that gathered in Frankfurt in the late 30s, and they came up with these theories. And that what they were good at was promoting these theories. But the idea of cultural hegemony and cultural Marxism, I have friends of mine who are in Eastern Europe, and they see how cultural Marxism is spreading throughout Western Europe today. And they're very concerned about it because they lived under Marxism. And I have a friend of mine, he's a Supreme Court justice in Slovenia. And he said, you know, he'd lived through communism there until the 1990s when they finally got rid of it. But even now there's a, you know, people who had a vested interest in keeping Slovenia communist are still trying to pull it back into communism. But he's greatly afraid, tremendously afraid of what is happening in Western Europe with the ascension of cultural Marxism. And by the way, if you ever get a chance, maybe I could try to get you to interview him. I mean, he's a hell of a lot smarter than I ever was. And he's a great guy. And he is.
Well, we would love to have him on the show because just, like you said, he's concerned about it, just looking at, you know, Western European, yeah. Europe, but I'm looking at the United States, and we have had guests to come on from Cuba, from Venezuela, and they have said the exact same thing that what they see that's happening with the media at the forefront, controlling the message and not being truthful is what happened in a lot of these other countries. The media came out backing these crazy ideas, and then once they put it out there, they eradicated them, got rid of them. They were able to go full throttle with what they wanted to do, these leaders. You look at Venezuela, still a rich country, but look at what the government has done. Look at the Cubans, not too long ago, out in the streets saying, we want to dump this government, embracing the American flag. And what did this administration do? Look the other way. We have the Secretary of Homeland Security come out and say, do not come here because we will send you back. Meanwhile, at our southern borders, they're letting thousands and thousands of people come in. Why is that? Why are they letting them come in? Andrew, I can't believe it when you see this happening.
Yeah, well, the idea again is disruption. Okay. If you let a bunch of people in who are not citizens of the country, you know, there was an interview on Fox with the Viktor Orban, the prime minister of Hungary. Great, great interview. The guy's very, you know, he gets slammed as being a fascist, the usual things. But the point is, he said, look, you have a country, you have borders. If you don't have borders, you don't have a nation. He says, we have a nation, we have a unique culture, a unique language, We have our own government and we have to protect it. Now, if you let people come in, well, obviously things will be disrupted. And that's what the communists, the leftists want. They want to disrupt things. They want to make things chaotic. They want to, because this all helps get rid of the establishment order. It all gets rid of the established society. And yeah, they cannot, they understand, they you know, like I said, they saw what happened in Eastern Europe. They knew that a revolution was able to replace the existing czar royal the monarchies with communism, but you didn't have that issue in Western Europe, okay? And the workers weren't the workers weren't motivated to do those things. The rest of society, the bourgeois society was not, didn't have the discontent that they had in Eastern Europe. And that's why Gramsci felt that the best way to do this was to do it culturally, to change their minds, you know, win hearts and minds. That's what they're trying to do. They're trying to win the hearts and minds. And to do that, they have to lie. They can't tell the truth. So they have to lie about things. And the way they able to perpetuate their lies are to control the opinion forming institutions, the news media, the entertainment industry, the literature, the colleges, the universities, and now the schools. The schools are our favorite. And that's what that's where they've progressed to now, to get down into the schools.
Yeah, and that's what we are seeing play out. We are getting a real education on critical race theory today. We are here with journalist Michael Tremogli of the Houston Courant, and you are tuned into After Dark with Rob and Andrew, available on America Out Loud via iHeartRadio, Spotify, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, or download the America Out Loud app to keep track of all the great shows. We'll be back with more After Dark with Rob and Andrew.
Well, my fellow Americans, how did you feel watching footage on the news of domestic terrorists looting our stores and burning our cities down? You were probably disgusted and angry as much as I was. It's disturbing what's going on. Well, you'd be shocked to know that your shopping habits are supporting these extremists. Companies like Amazon, Nike, Disney, FedEx, it's an endless list. And they've been supporting these radical groups. Let's stop supporting companies that fund these extremist groups. We can all do our part. Visit shoptotheright.com and you'll find businesses in a nationwide database and companies that are aligned with our American values. Visit shoptotheright.com and let's all make a difference.
Trouble getting to sleep and staying asleep can be infuriating. Your mind races. You toss and turn, and the harder you try, the harder it is to drift off. And today's digital age makes it even harder. You're not alone with this struggle. Poor sleep affects over 70% of Americans. Even the Centers for Disease Control label insufficient sleep a public health epidemic. To take back your sleep, Healthy Cell has created REM Sleep, the only sleep supplement made to support all four stages of human sleep with calming herbs, amino acids, and sleep hormone support, delivered in a patent-pending, pill-free, ultra-absorption microgel formula that tastes great. Fall asleep, stay asleep, sleep deeply, and wake up refreshed with Healthy Cell's REM Sleep. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order. That's HealthyCell.com, HEALTHYCELL, and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
While the cancel culture is determined to destroy our history, bringing violence and terror to city streets, America Out Loud will enhance its own message of love and honor for the American traditions and constitutional values that have always been the backbone of what America means: life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
And we're back with After Dark with Rob and Andrew with our guest, Michael Tremogli, and we're talking about critical race theory. You even have jobs that are pushing this in some form or fashion. And the thing that you have to be aware of is that it isn't so open that you would think, well, they didn't call it CRT, so it's not CRT, doesn't work that way. Because we can say, don't teach it, and then they will try it another way. Even the president of the Teachers Association said that they are ready to defend any teacher who is sued or fired for teaching this. They're ready. Now imagine, they're going to use all of that money to defend someone who's teaching something that you don't want taught. We're the taxpayers. You do what I say, not what you want to do. And what is the purpose behind it anyway? What are we trying to get at? What is the end goal other than, as Michael said, a Marxist society? Tear down everything about Western civilization. Tear down everything that's American. You have kids that don't like America. When my kid was home and his seven-year-old cousin, I taught them the Pledge of Allegiance. They knew nothing about it. They had heard of it, but they knew nothing about putting their hands over their heart because schools, oh, we can't teach that. But if you were to ask them about the latest rap song, they would know every verse of it. Who was Lil Nas? Oh, they know all of his songs. But if you were to ask them something about the Bible, well, I don't know anything about that. Ask them who the president is. Ask them about the Constitution. They know nothing about it. But diversity, that's at the top of the list. Look at our military. They all taking their diversity training. Corporations, Coca-Cola, try not to be so white. Well, if you're white, what are you talking about? I didn't know that white had an identity. One of our guests came on, Susan McAllister, and she talked that how dangerous it is when you start giving rights to identity. Now, what if someone were to say, oh, don't act so black. Oh, that's racist. Oh, well, you just said, try not to be so white. Be aware that some of the things that you say could come off as being insensitive. Like what? This is part of the woke society that they're pushing all this stuff into it. So if they tell you, oh, we're not teaching CRT, don't believe them. Look at the curriculum. Oh, this job has nothing to do with CRT. Don't believe them, because the moment they're sitting you there and say all this diversity stuff and the way it's slanted, don't get me wrong. We should all be aware of our neighbors. We should all love one another. But when it starts coming down to, we're going to put this group down to uplift another, oh, we're messing up now. We're creating another form of discrimination. And that is racist. That's racism. Michael, what do you say?
Well, we were talking earlier about Herbert Marcuse. And, Herbert Marcuse was, again, one of the guys that from the Frankfurt School, and he's one of the originators of this critical race theory, taking ideas that he read about from Antonio Gramsci. And for all I know, he may have even knew Antonio Gramsci personally. But Marcuse was a mentor of Angela Davis. Eric Fromm, who's a well-known academician here in the United States, he was a guy that wrote a book, The Sane Society, condoning socialism. And socialism, as you know, is responsible for more genocide, poverty, and despair than any other social order. This is who they look at as heroes, the left. Okay, this is who they revere. And when I see how our intellectuals, our intelligentsia latch onto these ideas, you kind of realize what Orwell meant when he said that in his Notes on Nationalism, 1949 or 45, he wrote a series of essays. He said, only intellectuals, only the intelligentsia believe Soviet propaganda. No ordinary person could be such a fool. And that's basically what's happened in the United States. And what people need to understand is that things like critical race theory, cultural Marxism, cultural hegemony, the Frankfurt School, this isn't about right or wrong. This is about power. That's it. This is about power. It's not that these people aren't trying to cure the ills of the world. They're not trying to eliminate racism. They're not trying to eliminate poverty. They're not trying to eliminate genocide. They're not trying to eliminate slavery. In fact, if anything, they do the exact opposite. They exacerbate it. It is about power. They want power. They want control. And that's all this is about. And people have to realize this, and they have to realize the roots of these things. And the more they understand the history and the nature and the origins of these concepts and the people who were putting forth these ideas and how wrong these people have been, how wrong their ideas have been, how wrong their policies have been, how damaging their policies have been, how absolutely genocidal and murderous their policies have been, that will go, that will help discredit them. But until we know this history, the nature and the origins of this, that's just not going to happen, because people are just not going to be able to argue this in the public square, which, you know, could be anything from a classroom, like you were talking about, Rob, you know, going and talking to teachers in the PTA sessions or back to school nights or something like that, to the local bar when you're sitting down talking to somebody, or to go into a write a letter to the editor to the newspaper, or a candidate talking to a journalist who's going to try to play gotcha. That's what needs to be done. And until you do that, our side is going to be discredited. So we have to know what we're talking about. And that's what I'm trying to do with these articles.
And you're right. We're going to be discredited, and we're going to be looked at as being aloof. We don't know what we're talking about, and that we don't want history taught. And that's not it at all. We want it taught. But Michael, something that I wanted to ask you, just looking at the two pieces that I've read, why is it that it seems it's always the individuals who are the elitist, so they think, that they know more than us, that we can't make these decisions, we can't possibly be as smart as they. They've gone to all the pedigree schools. And on the right, and I don't want to break it down to like political lines, but there are individuals who are conservatives, who are just as smart, who's gone to all these schools, and they too have an opinion and thought processes and have written papers on this, but it's rejected. Does it go back to that we don't, or they don't control, or they're unable to control the narratives to get their messages out there?
Two things. All right. Number one, yes, that's the main reason, is that they don't have control of those institutions of society. Okay. And because of that, now their message will not get out there. And number two, don't forget, a lot of the cultural elite on the conservative side are just as bad as the cultural elite on the left wing side. You know, you take a guy like, what the heck was his name? Bill Kristol, a Weekly Standard. You know, Bill Kristol looks at people who are not Ivy League educated or didn't come from Phillips Exeter or, you know, places like that as Neanderthals, as less than human. And, you know, we can't make up our own minds. We're not as smart as he is. You know, that these were the people that looked at carpenters and electricians and plumbers and tractor trailer drivers as people, you know, are just too stupid, that they, you know, they don't have all their teeth. They don't take baths. You know, they don't read books, that if you're a small business owner, you got the IQ of house dust. You know, that's what, you know, and these are on our side of the ideological continuum. They still have that class difference that they do. And because, I mean, I can't tell you how many times people look to me, well, you're a former police officer, and they kind of wrinkle their nose, or, you know, kind of turn away from me because I'm stupid. You know, I didn't graduate from Ivy League school. I was a night school student, blah, 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 blah. They, you know, they look down at me, and I understand why they did. They've been taught that they are superior intellectually and morally, and, you know, they're much too good for the common person, you know, the hoi polloi. So this exists on both sides of the ideological continuum. But the reason why our side can't get those ideas out is primarily because, as I said, that we don't have control of the opinion forming institutions. My problem, though, is that if we did, I don't want the Bill Kristols of the world representing me. Okay.
You're spot on. You're right.
Yeah.
The Bill Kristols of the world. Right. Yeah. They too have that elitism in their blood. Boy, looking down. And it's really unfortunate. They look down and their noses are up in the air and you can't tell them anything. And they're just, to me, as akin to the liberal elitist.
Yeah, there's not much difference between them. I always say these are people that, you know, like I said, they describe themselves as fiscal conservatives, social liberals. I said, yeah, they're Democrats that don't want to pay taxes. That's about it. And that's why I describe myself as a fiscal liberal and a social conservative. There's a guy named Frank Buckley, a professor down at George Mason. He's along those same lines. He wrote a book about the working class and, you know, why we voted for Trump. And I consider myself a working class person, even though I guess by income and net worth, I'm not in that, I would not be in that socioeconomic class anymore. But That's just a, it's just been the past 20, 25 years of my life, 30 years of my life. Before that, I was definitely working class and poor. And I still consider myself working class, and I still consider myself to have those beliefs and those ideas. And I think most people, and I think, you and Andrew sound that way as well, that, you know, we're people that we think of, we want communities that are safe, productive. We want people to be courteous, civil. We want to take care of our families, to give our children, our descendants better lives than what we had. We want to make sure that we do the best we can to make our areas, our communities, the best they can be. We work hard. We live within our means. We take what money we have to save. We try to invest it the best way we can, so we get an unearned income. We pay our taxes. We have no problem with that. We support our military. We support our police. We support our doctors. We support our teachers when they're not whack jobs. And, so this is what I'm saying. This is what we do.
Yeah. Over the last decade or so, we've definitely seen an uptick in like right-wing speakers at colleges causing riots outside of like UC Berkeley, University of Oregon, and some of these other left-wing colleges. We've also seen the rise in Black Lives Matter and Antifa. This is a pretty loaded question, but Michael, who do you think is responsible for pushing this into American culture, the critical race theory? You think this could come from George Soros pushing this on people? And
Andrew, like I said, as I wrote, this has been around for a while. This is nothing new. It goes back, like I said, at least 100 years ago with Antonio Gramsci and his ideas. And then these ideas were taken by this Frankfurt School, and they were communicated through academia. The academicians read, they influenced the journalists, they influenced the arts. So you've got the movies and the theater and the literature and the painters and the musicians. You know, I mean, you look at the music from the 60s and the 70s, what was it? I mean, it was just, it just got worse. I mean, they were anti-establishment then. You guys are too young, I think, probably to remember the Vietnam War. I remember vividly what happened then and what was going on then. I remember I tried to join the Marines when I was 16 and go over to Vietnam. This is what was happening, and it just spread. And it's like anything else. It takes time. These things are not revolutionary. They're evolutionary. And it takes time for these ideas to spread. It is going to take, what happened, Andrew, is that our side was complacent. While all this was happening, we did nothing. We did nothing. We thought it was a fringe lunatics and they'll go away and we can just go back to doing what we do. And I still see that today evident in a lot of people. There's this complacency. Oh, well, this will go away. This is just no, it's not going to go away. It may, what you see now, the current iteration may go away, but it'll come back again as something else. Critical race theory was around when my son was in high school in the 90s. It was around when I was in high school in the late 60s, early 70s. It was a different form. It was a different name, but the ideas were still there. Okay. And for all I know, they probably were around in the 50s. I don't know, but these ideas are around. It's just a question to what degree. And now it's a large degree, and it's going to get larger if, you know, people don't stop it. We got to start pushing back.
You're right. It is. It has been around, and it will go away, but it will come back under something completely different. Mm-hmm. So we might think that they're not teaching it, but they are. So, Michael, what can we do in order to stop this? What can our schools do? I heard the other day someone was saying is pull your kids out of public schools.
No.
Everyone can't do that.
You know, that's the same crap they always say. You always want to run away. You got to fight them. You have to fight them in the schools. Don't take your kid out of school. Put your kid in school. Let your kid speak out. Tell your kid, challenge that teacher. And if that teacher engages in grade retribution, you're going to raise hell with them. You're going to organize other parents. And you're all going to go in there and raise hell with them. This is time, you know, you got to stop running. It's time to fight. Okay, we've been running for so long on our side. Okay, as I wrote in one of the articles, only a few of us were talking about critical race theory years ago. Right? Everybody else just ignored it. It's time to fight. Do the things that you're doing, okay, and promote your show. Get your show out there. Take copies of your damn show and bring it to every school board, every school district that you have. Try to find a sympathetic teacher, okay? Let them listen to your podcast. Yeah, that's what the left does, Rob. That's what the left does. They don't start big. They started small, okay, and they built it up. Go out there. Everybody, get in front of everybody you can. Ronald Reagan used to say he'll talk to a group of two. Didn't matter. He used to go out there and he would make speeches. And that's what I want to do. If you've got a group of people I can talk, I'll get in front of somebody. I don't mind.
And that's what we have to do. Right. That's what we have to do. I remember having on our show once Kimberly Fletcher, Moms of America, and she's going to come back on. And she said exactly the same thing, that you have to form groups. You have to start small, but you can't give up. You have to be involved because they're
Me in touch with her. Me in touch with her.
They're hoping that you'll
give up. Get a network going between the three of us, the four of us. You know?
Right. They're hoping that we will give up. They want you to give up and go away. And that way they have complete control. But the more we push back, the more we stand up and have our voices heard, a change will come. Like you, that's what they're doing.
And that's what they have done. I ran for school board in my district here, and which is becoming very, left wing. We got a superintendent there. He's a piece of work guy. Anyway, I ran for school board. I got 748 Democrat votes. Now, people are astounded. I'm astounded by it. You know, how the hell did I get 748 Democrat votes? I don't know. But obviously, there was people listening to me, and they liked my message, and they liked what I was saying. And these are Democrats. And that was a shock to me, because the Democrats are fairly fanatical, but apparently not. There's some out there that are a little bit willing to listen to the truth. And that's what you have to do. You got to speak up. Don't be silent anymore. Those days are done. It's just, the silent majority, forget about it. It's not going to go away. The silent majority became a silent minority now. It's time to be a vocal minority, maybe a vocal majority.
Right. To speak up, be counted, because if you don't, they will definitely steamroll on over you. And something that you said that I think is also critical is that there are Democrats, liberals, that think and feel the exact same way, but they're afraid. They're afraid to say anything.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. So that's like what Andrew was saying, you have to get out there now. It is time to take back control of those opinion-forming institutions. It's not going to happen very easily. It's not going to happen. Don't get discouraged if it doesn't happen, within a generation. It may take more than a generation. Do you know that there was an organization called the Institute for Socialist Scholars, and that was formed back in 1905. Some of the members of that were people like Upton Sinclair, Clarence Darrow. You may recognize those names. These were people that wanted to spread socialism in academia. That was 116 years ago. Where were we at that time? It wasn't until the 1950s, I believe, that you came up with the Intercollegiate Studies Institute, which was a conservative organization. So we're a half century behind, easily. We got a lot of catch up to do.
Absolutely, we do. And we can't give up. We have to continue moving on. Now, just speaking along those same lines, looking at our leaders, our elected officials, you look at Joe Biden, who seems to be completely oblivious, so it seems, as to what's going on. You look at his press secretary, Jennifer Psaki, and her denial of CRT when it was found that they have some of the rhetoric and one of the syllabuses going out from the Board of Education. They said, oh, no, we don't know how it got there. What do you mean you don't know how it got there? Someone clearly put it there. And to me, that was the biggest excuse that could not even hold water. And why didn't Republicans push back on it and say, wait a minute, there's something wrong with this. I know that we're not the majority, but I think that we have got to start holding them responsible and start pushing back and letting them know, no, you guys have got to do more than what you're doing. It's too much lip service. You do a good talk, but when it's time to get there and fight, where are you guys? They're getting ready to vote on this stupid infrastructure bill, which has embedded in it a lot of CRT stuff that will be going out to the schools. Where are our elected officials?
All too often, the Republicans have been missing in action. And, I've as a journalist, I've seen this happen up close and personal, where I remember one time I broke a story back in 2009 about the collusion between the Obama campaign and this group called Acorn. And the New York Times had spiked that story and went national, that piece. And I interviewed a guy named James Sensenbrenner, a Republican from Wisconsin. He was the minority chairman of the committee that was, in which I found out that this woman was testifying about this. And, I was watching it on C-SPAN and I heard it and I wrote about it, and it's like nobody else heard it. and all of a sudden became national. But I interviewed Sensenbrenner. He gave me a bunch of platitudes, and then later his secretary, press secretary, came on, and she told me, she said that they're deathly afraid of being called racist. Republicans are deathly afraid of being called racist.
Yep.
So that's how this guilt trip.
You know what? They're going to be called racist anyway. So
I know that. You know that.
Right. As one of our guests said, go ahead, accept it. You're going to be called racist anyway. That's one of the things that I liked about Donald Trump, is that when
he didn't care.
He would, like, whereas with George Bush, he would
he'd pull apart.
Right.
Yeah.
But Trump is like, okay.
Yeah. Go pound sand, you know. And you and I both know that, as you know, and Andrew as well. I mean, you're going to always be called a racist. You're going to be called a sexist. You're going to be called a homophobe. You're going to be called this. You're going to be called that, a fascist, blah, 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 blah. So what? That's what they do. So what? So I'm going to call you a communist. I'm going to call you a racist. I'm going to call you a classist. I'm going to call you a Christophobe. Okay, that's a word I made up, meaning, you know, you hate, you fear Christ, or you hate Christians. Okay. You know, you can come up, you can invent words too. Christophobic or something like that. You can, you know, neologism, the same way the left does it. And you put labels on them as well. And that's what I've done in my writing over the years. You know, you'd use the same kind of labels. You know, they would call Black people Uncle Toms. I said, well, you know, I call them Comrade Toms. Okay. And, you know, I mean, it's just as easy to make up names. You got to be a little creative. You can make up names for them too. So, and you hit them back with it. Now, yes, they have a bigger megaphone. No question about it. That's just an obstacle we got to overcome. We let that happen. We let them get control. Well, now we got to do something about it.
And as much as possible, because if we don't, say nothing, they roll right over us.
Your kids, my children, my grandchildren, it's, I don't know if you got grandkids, my grandchildren, they'll, you know, they're going to grow up in a society I don't want to think about.
Yeah, absolutely. We all worry about that. We are joined tonight by Michael Tremogli of the Houston Courant. Michael, if people want to follow up and get in touch with you, what is the best way that they could do so?
Give me an email. Send me an email at MPT. So like Mike Papa Tom, MPT405@gmail.com.
Thank you so much. So much useful information in this show. Critical Race Theory, Michael Tremogli, the Houston Courant. Make sure you look up those articles and check it out. And thank you all for joining us tonight on After Dark with Robin Andrew. Check us out and all the other shows over at AmericaOutloud.com, who just celebrated its 5th anniversary. You can also find America Out Loud on iHeartRadio, Spotify, or Stitcher. Make sure you check out all the shows over at America Out Loud. We will see you guys next time. And remember to stand for something, or you will fall for nothing.